most of you have good hearts. That's one good part of all this. I mean, so much of this is virtually heart-stopping. That the majority of you calling who have been through these experiences, you've just got to have good hearts, right? Good, strong hearts, because here you are telling your story. East of the Rockies, your turn to tell your story. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you, and what is your first name, and where art thou?
I'm Barbara, and I'm calling from Jonesboro, Arkansas.
All right, Barb.
When I was about 12 years old, my mom had started to drink. And if you know anything about alcoholism, if they don't want to get help, you watch them get progressively worse.
Until they hit bottom, that's right.
Yeah, so over the years, that's what happened until I was about 19. And at that point, I watched my mom get very bad and watch her change physically over the years. And she finally died an alcoholic. She just wouldn't get help.
I'm so sorry.
But one day, about 3 months after she died, I had gone back to the house where I was not living at home at the time. I went back to help my dad, and there were some dirty dishes in the sink, so I decided I would wash them up, and I was just kind of not thinking about anything, looking out the window at the backyard where I used to play, and I just felt like somebody had walked in the room and was standing next to me, and I looked over really quick, and there's my mother standing. But she looked at me, and I was so shocked. She looked, her face was all glowing, and her skin looked really healthy, and she looked healthy. Her hair was looked soft, and she said to me, "Don't worry about me. I am so happy now," and she was smiling. That's something I hadn't seen her done in years. And I don't know why I did this, but I kind of turned to the other direction, I guess for a reality check. And then I looked back, and as I was turning my head back, I wanted to say, "Mom,"
right.
And she was gone.
All right, here's what I want to ask you. And I'm sure you've asked yourself this many times. We hear so many stories like the one you just told, although usually not an appearance, and rarely does the person talk like this, but is there any possibility that your mind could have concocted this, you know, in some sort of psychological calming for yourself? Or
no chance
of that? This was real, huh?
Yeah, because I was just so shocked, and afterwards I was shaking because I thought, my goodness, it's just so bizarre. And I never told my dad because I just felt he wouldn't believe me. But, you know, because of this whole thing with alcoholism, my mom and I didn't have a very good relationship anyway.
Right.
And her coming to me and smiling and just saying, "Don't worry, I'm okay," was just weird. I mean, it was just out of character, I guess you'd say.
Well, there are many who believe that on the other side, if we make it, you know, to the supposed good place, you are restored to your best health and all the rest of that sort of thing. And so maybe it's all true.
I know, but she was glowing. I mean, she just had this glowing appearance.
Very healthy. The exact opposite of what she was in life. That's, I hope that's true. And for you, is it now true? I mean, was it so real that you have no doubt at all in your mind about kind of the nature of the other side now?
Oh, I wish that were true, but I still question myself.
You still have questions, huh?
Yeah, because I don't know. I don't know. I guess everybody goes through a period where they kind of question, if they had faith, they kind of question it. And maybe that's where I'm at now, but I remembered the story. As I was listening to your show, and I thought, oh, my gosh,
yeah,
I remember
well,
that.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for calling. And that was an important question for me. I mean, the question about could, and she responded so quickly, no. You know, could it have been some sort of psychological protection, you know, of your own mind reaching out and telling you what you essentially want to hear? But she came back very quickly, no. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello, Art.
Yes, sir.
Hi, this is Murray in Portland.
I'm sorry, the first name again? Murray?
Murray.
Murray, okay. Welcome, Murray.
Thank you, sir. I'm a long-time listener. I started listening to you in 1991 or 1992.
It's been a while.
A long ride. Well, the reason I'm calling is that I had quite a ghost experience in 1988, and it's changed my life forever. And it's funny, when I found your show, I found that I wasn't the only guy out there that experienced this type of stuff. That was great.
Well, you know, that is one thing about this program, of course, that people do hear other people, and then they say to themselves, I guess, well, I guess I'm not nuts.
My wife still thinks I am.
How so? All right, so what happened?
Well, I was going to school in Fulton, Missouri, a place called Westminster College, and TV ended there. We were poor, you know, pretty bad shape at that time. Couldn't afford cable. So TV shuts off pretty early, and you have to find something else to do.
Right.
We had turned on, I was with my cousin Mark and my friend Peter, and TV had ended. Yet we hadn't turned the TV off. We were just doing other things. We, by that time, a stereo had come on.
I was going to ask, is that back to the days when TV stations would sign off, play the Star Spangled Banner, and go off the air?
That's right. I believe the last show was Star Trek, and then they would do that. And that was out of Jeff City, Missouri. It was the only TV you could get.
Okay, so I remember all that, yes.
Yeah, those old days. So white noise had come on through the little television. It was probably a 14-inch TV.
That's right.
And my friend Peter was just noticed out of the corner of his eye, you could see images running in the snow. And it looked like, you know, a feed from another station. And it was quiet. It was odd. It was very odd. And 5 minutes of this or something. And then it just passed. It was, and we turned the TV off, listening to a record.
Right.
And this is where all reality ended. And I had the weirdest experience of my life. We're just sitting there in his living room in my cousin's house. And then we just hear a large groan come out of the kitchen.
A groan.
And it definitely caught our attention. We're like, what was that?
Human or animal type groan?
Human, definitely. From behind the corner, which would have been out of the kitchen, steps a lady. It looks like she's made of black smoke. You could see right through her. You could see the wall, the door behind her. And where she stopped in front of me, I could see a speaker behind her.
This is the moment you know your heart's okay, by the way.
It was definitely strange. I looked at my cousin. He looked at me. We're like, what is going on? And she's looking at us, and we're looking at her. And it got really strange from there. I don't understand when she disappeared. But the next thing we saw in front of us were three little boys playing jacks at our feet on the hardwood floors of the apartment.
Here we go again.
Little boys playing jacks, and you could, same thing, see right through them. They were made of black smoke. Like when you burn plastic, I don't know, when I was a teenager growing up in Missouri, like on 4th of July, you'd see plastic burning. It was just acrid black smoke, and it was just angry. It was just strange.
God. That'd be, and more?
Oh, it just keeps going, sir. And I'll try to hurry, because I know we have a few listeners out there. I just think we mentally, all three of us, kind of lost it so much when we saw these little boys playing. And two were skinny, and one was heavier. And that was even funny. We all remember the same thing today. Somehow, that made a segue. I just cannot explain it. And that's the weirdest thing of the whole story, is that suddenly there was a little girl. My mother, like Shirley Temple growing up, it reminded me of Shirley Temple. And she was doing cartwheels in place at the exact same place where we saw the older lady ghost and the boys playing.
And again, black smoke?
Just see right through. Now, you know, I've heard that term shadow people for all these years on your program, and
yeah.
I just don't know if that applies. I just don't even...
Well, I was almost going to jump to that myself. Anyway, did this all end, or how did it...
No. Did I mention that they were wearing period clothes? It was evident to us that
you did not mention that.
I'm so sorry. I'm a little excited.
When you say period clothes, what period?
Minimum turn of the century. It's not a PC thing, but the
you mean early, like 1900s?
Or earlier. This is Fulton, Missouri. You know, they, Kingdom of Callaway, they seceded from the state and during the Civil War and stuff, so they've had a long history there.
Right.
Well, to cut to the point, we were watching this, observing this, and just couldn't believe it. And then there was just no image, I think, where it was with our thoughts. It's very hard to explain. And then in kicks the front door, and an African-American guy, big old man, runs in very angry. And he's pointing and yelling into the kitchen area where that original apparition had walked out. And he's just angry. You can tell he's a very abusive man. It just scared us to death. Then he saw us. He turned at me. He looked me straight in the eye, and he just cut across the room straight at me. And he got to within 3 or 4 feet of me, stared me straight in the face.
And?
He proceeded. He pulled his hand back and tried to punch me 2 or 3 times repeatedly. My friends are screaming at me. They're sitting down a little bit lower on a couch. They're screaming, no, no. And he swings at me. And he didn't make contact. He could not make contact. And he sat back about a foot, and I sat up in my chair, and he looked at me, and I looked at him, and absolutely positively, right there, we just knew we were just worlds apart.
Boy, you're right about one thing. That's where reality ended, and then all of this whole thing began.
And I could just see it on his face, and I just don't remember much. I remember my friends were like whimpering.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And we were just so in shock.
And you all remember it the same way now?
Exactly. One of my friends after this quit school. It changed our lives completely.
I'm sure it would. That's into a... how would you describe that? It's like you walked into... No, because there were several of them. So a different world opened up in front of you. Different creatures, different... perhaps a different dimension. I really don't know how to describe what I just heard. That's really weird stuff. Several entities of some sort. Just a whole collage of them. Maybe that's a bevy of them. You're on the air, Ghost to Ghost AM05. Hi.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Hello, Arbel. How you doing, man? I'm calling from San Antonio. This is John.
Yes, John.
We love you, man. You're awesome, dude.
Thank you. You have a story for us, John?
Yeah, I just wanted to talk. One time I had a... It was on Halloween. It was down here in San Antonio at the train tracks. And
the famous train tracks?
The famous train tracks. And we went out there one day with a couple of friends, and we're in the back of a big, big, very big pickup truck. It was a 4x4 off-road, very big. And there was four of us in the back of the truck. We went to the train tracks, and we did it one time. Went through it, we're messing around, goofing, laughing.
All right,
about
you
it.
Really ought to tell the audience, I suppose, a little bit of the background of the train track story in San Antonio.
Well, it's supposedly of a school bus that tried to go over, and I think it stalled.
The school bus stalled.
The school bus stalled, and supposedly they didn't get the kids out on time. The train came and took all of them.
Right. But now, subsequent to that, there have been so many stories about people who have intentionally parked their vehicles on the train tracks, some of them sprinkling powders and stuff, and these vehicles are pushed over these train tracks in San Antonio, and you can actually see little children's hand marks on the back of the vehicles.
Yeah, I tried the baby powder, but I never got anything from that. But what's amazing is that this vehicle that we're in was very big, very humongous.
And what did it move?
Yeah, it moved. It moved it. And what was weird is that it goes it goes up on a hill a little bit. And the third time around, I was telling my friend to mess with the brakes. He kept messing with the brakes. I told him, when you get right to the slope and the truck's pointing kind of up at an angle, I said, step on the brakes. I said, and make it come to a complete stop. He did that, and then I told him to let it go because I wanted to see if he was going to push the big...
Were really testing this, weren't you?
They pushed over the truck, and it went sliding to a slope to the side, And there was four guys in the back. I had four friends in the back. And there was three people inside the truck. Girl in the middle, my friend Donald, Angel driving the truck, four of us in the back.
And you all witnessed.
Yeah, well, we had already did it about three times. And the third time when we were doing it,
yes,
we did that slope, and we heard a bunch of children crying. We could hear, you're talking, I heard from 7 to 8 children
crying,
moaning and crying, and this was the best surround sound that you could have ever heard of children just crying. We freaked out, and everybody looked at each other. We told each other, did y'all hear
Brother.
That? And they said, yeah, and I asked them what they hear, and they said that they heard children crying. Two guys in the back claimed that they heard a train coming. I didn't hear no train coming, but I heard, we all heard the children crying, man, and let me tell you, it scared. It scared us. I just started yelling to the
guys.
Well,
you should not have. All right. First of all, you should not have been testing that in that way. You know, I've heard from enough people about this story that I guess I believe it's true. That these children that were killed now push vehicles off these train tracks. But to go and intentionally test it in the way you did and to apply the brakes and to cause these entities to break out in tears, that's a little much. I don't think I'd be testing it in that way. That's really tempting some kind of fate, I think. You're on the air, Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Hi.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning. Where are you, sir?
Mike in Traverse City, Michigan.
Hey, Mike.
How are you this morning?
Well, a little freaked out, but...
It is so good to hear you on the radio.
Thank you.
And our story comes kind of from the old country, from Ireland.
Okay, you're going to have to speak up good and loud for me.
Okay. My wife and I make a number of trips to Ireland. We've been there three of the last 4 years and four times total. And we like to hunt out castles. And there are so many there that the people are so nice, you can usually knock on a door or of a caretaker or the castle itself and get the guided tour or get permission.
Yeah, that's cool. I'd love to go castle hunting myself.
Oh, it's great. It's so ancient, and my wife kind of has that touch. Her grandmother's from Ireland, and they said she had the shining, so to speak.
Oh.
But there are some castles that you just can't get permission because nobody's around, and so you, hate to say it, you trespass. And you figure if you get caught, you apologize, and hopefully
really?
Just leave.
Okay.
But we went to Charleville. Right, pretty much smack in the center of Ireland. It's a Gothic castle built, I'd say, in the mid-1700s.
Yes, sir.
And reputedly one of the most haunted in Ireland. And, again, literally sits right in the center of the island. We hit it on a Friday afternoon, and it's got one of those long, winding roads that goes through oak groves and trees, and it's just the most ghoulish thing you could imagine.
Yes.
And we hit it, finally made that 1 mile drive up the driveway, and parked in the parking lot, and just a beautiful Gothic castle, very big. And went and knocked on the door, and of course nobody answered. And so we kind of just walked the perimeter, and we noticed a lot of sawhorses and construction material around, and we figured, like a lot of old castles, it was under renovation.
Yes.
So we kind of kept walking the perimeter, and then we heard a horn honk, and we thought, well, we're busted. We might as well, you know, go admit and then leave. And came around, and there was a few more cars in the parking lot, and people that were dressed up in suits and tuxedos were going in the castle. So we asked one what was going on, and they basically ignored us. And we kind of followed them in and saw that they were taking wedding pictures.
All right, I believe we're back to the castle. Welcome back, sir.
Hey, Art. Very fitting bumper music, Year of the Cat.
Yes.
We were at our castle in Ireland, Charleville Castle, and we kind of split off from the wedding party, and immediately we headed up a long spiral staircase that was rickety and almost kind of like in that Julie Harris movie, The Haunting.
Mm-hmm.
And couldn't believe it, got probably 2 or 3 floors up and did the thing you scream at movie characters for doing. I turn around and my wife's gone. She split off down the hallway.
Always.
Always. And I told myself that, and it's like, this is probably the dumbest thing I've ever done. So kind of rattled around and found her, came back down the stairs, and we saw stairs going down. So we proceeded, and we ended up in the dungeon. And all this time, from the time that we came in with the wedding party, this white cat was following us around and kind of rubbing against our legs, and we'd pick it up and pet it, and it purred, and just it followed us up the stairs and in the grand hallway, and then down into the dungeon. So we get down into the dungeon, and now we know we're really kind of in an area we shouldn't be, so our senses are really heightened because we're just sure we're going to get caught, and there's really not much apologizing you can do other than just face the consequences.
Not by the time you're in the dungeon.
Yep. There's no way out now. And so we're down there, and we start hearing the construction noises and the remodeling noises and saws, you know, being placed down and saw horses being moved around and tools dropped and people walking. So we're really trying to avoid that. And we hear it ahead of us, and so we go a little bit further, and then we kind of back up. And down in this dungeon in Charleville, it's a long, narrow hallway with alcoves shooting off to the left and to the right, like little black tunnels, which is kind of creepy as you're walking by them.
Sure.
And, excuse me, all of a sudden we hear the footfalls coming down the steps, and it's one of those kind of square spiral steps. So the boots are coming down the steps, and my wife leaps in a dark alcove and beckons me in, and I kind of hit that deer in the headlights thing and just froze. And the cat was on the bottom landing at the last turn, and the steps came down one at a time, distinctly hearing these steps, and all of a sudden the cat looked at me, looked up at the steps, and just hissed and arched her back, and then the noise stopped. And so we thought, boy, caught another break, and kept kind of walking around and hearing a lot of these noises, but could never find them. Well, as we came out finally and left the castle, we went out to our car and noticed that, you know, we were the only car when we got here, and now we're the only car while we're here. And it's like 6 o'clock on a Friday night. We know that these good Irish folks aren't working construction after 5 o'clock on a Friday night. So what were those noises coming from? And never really did figure it out. Now, this last year, 2005, in fact, in September, we went back for a trip, and we met the owner of the castle. Wonderful lady. She's an American, been there, I think, 15 years now. And she gave us the guided tour of the castle, which is just steeped in history and Masonic history and...
Okay, we've only got a very short time now.
Okay, and as we were chatting with her, we told her about our last trip and apologized, and she accepted the apology, and then as we were talking about where's the white cat at, she looked at us and said, what cat? And we described it, and she asked a few more nuances, and we described the cat further. She said, that cat has been dead since 2001. That was her kitten. And
yes.
We were kind of aghast at that point. Now, a year later, we've taken our digital photos and look at it, and you can see two apparitions of a cat.
Of the cat.
Orbs floating everywhere.
Okay, thank you very much. I haven't made up my mind about orbs. On the other hand, they're unusual. I mean, most people would, in photography, would say these are, you know, lens flashes, and everybody knows that if you get the sun in a lens, you're going to see a whole bunch of different suns, and these are what they attribute orbs to. But on the other hand, orbs have been picked up in some photography where it really may be the spirit or a spirit or something like that, because there's absolutely nothing that would do that to the lens. So orbs, I don't know, they're kind of in my gray basket. But some of them are kind of eerie. You're on the air, Ghost to Ghost, AM05. Hi.
All right, Bill?
Yes.
Hello, this is Juan from Pleasanton, Texas.
Yes.
To talk to you. I just wanted to say something about the year 2012.
Yes.
If you look in the Bible in verse 2012.
No, I don't generally allow verse reading.
On your own time, read it.
On my own time, okay.
It's kind of spooky.
Uh-huh.
Also, you're a cat lover, right?
Oh, yes.
You ever seen a 6 o'clock cat before?
As a matter of fact, yes.
You have?
I have. They're very unusual, but they do exist naturally. I mean, it happens. Like you get people with 6 fingers. It does happen. So there's nothing necessarily ghostly about that. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Yes.
Yes, hello. It's Michael calling you from Seattle. I'm actually a Portlander, and pleasure to talk to you again. I talked to you many years ago.
I'm glad you're back.
Well, thank you. In 1977, actually, I had just rented a lovely little, cozy little duplex, half of a duplex in Portland's West Hills. And about the third night that I was there, just settling in, First I sensed this entity behind me as I walked into, I was going in and out of my little place, and it was evening, and I sensed first, and I figured, well, maybe I'm wrong about this. I sensed a very tall being, And I actually turned around and I addressed him, and it was a male. I knew somehow it was a male. And I said, and I greeted him and told him I was no harm. I would be no harm to him, and he was welcome in my home.
Do you mean sensed in the, you know, in the sense that, you know, somebody's in the room with you, or sensed?
Yes. I sensed that somebody had walked into the door, and he was right there in my little place. Well, I didn't think much of it after that, and I was doing some things, and finally I got ready for bed, and I went to sleep. And I swear to God this story is true, and I swear on my wonderful own, my own father's memory. About somewhere around 2 a.m., give or take an hour, perhaps it was 2 a.m., and I was sound asleep. All of a sudden, the house had these beautiful little French windows that opened in. You had to open it, the window in, to get air into the room.
Sure.
And this was February, and it was very cold, a particularly cold night. And all of a sudden, the pole shades on both at the same time just went up. And, you know, when you pull on those old-fashioned shades and you let go, they go up really fast.
Yes.
And that's what happened. They each went up. It was almost simultaneous. It was kind of like bam, bam, like that.
Yeah.
And that woke me right up.
That would do it.
Yes, that'll do it all right. And then I watched each latch work. I watched the latches work, and I saw each of those windows, one at a time, opening up, opening into the room.
Oh.
And then, of course, and the wind was blowing, and these lace curtains that were on the windows, they were going.
By now, I'd be running.
I tell you, I did not sleep, obviously. I did not sleep the rest of that night. But I knew that it was taking its leave. It was exiting my life, and for some reason, I just knew that it didn't really either like me or relate to me or whatever.
Well, you still didn't get back to sleep, though.
Pardon?
You still didn't get back to sleep, though.
Oh, that's for sure. I was up the rest of that night. Yeah, the windows opened up. You know, they just
all
opened
by
in.
Themselves.
All by themselves. I watched the latch turn. I saw the windows opening, and I afterwards did talk to one of the. There were two gentlemen living there before me, and I said, you know, I had a ghost anyway. And they said, oh yes. And I said, well, why didn't you tell me? They said, because we thought, you know, that would really scare you, and we just figured it would probably be okay one way or the other.
Uh huh.
So that's my story.
And a good story it is. I appreciate the call, sir. Thank you. I wouldn't want to see anything move by itself. Not at all. And if you actually saw that, I think that, well, again, it would be a great way to know that your heart is in great condition. Especially, you know, those, as he described, those old shades. You remember those? You let go of them, they go right up. But then the latches, you might make your way past that one, but the latches moving in the windows and going up by themselves, no. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, what is your first name?
My name is Donna, and I'm calling from Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
Excellent.
And I listen to you on WHBY 1150 AM, and I had emailed you with... It was just three little stories about how I was raised in a haunted house. I will tell you the first incident, and it actually was the most frightening, even though I don't think you ever really get used to that kind of thing when it happens to you.
What happened?
Well, I was just a little girl, and I'm figuring now it was about 1959. I was raised in this house, and we kept this house until my father died in 1980. Mm-hmm. So... I need to let you know that my father worked during the day. He was a painting contractor, and my mother worked second shift at the hospital, so she wouldn't get home until 11 o'clock at night.
Right.
And I'm about 7 years old. I'm getting ready for bed. I'm in my bedroom. My father's in the kitchen, and we've had finished dinner, and he's washing the dishes. And I can still remember my little fingers pushing these buttons of my pajamas through the buttonholes as I hear Donna. And without even thinking, I just said, yes. And again. Donna. Well, then I thought it was somebody hiding in, under my bed.
Huh.
I'm a little girl. What do you think?
Yeah, so, about that. Maybe somebody's hiding under the bed.
Under the bed. And not a monster, though. I just figured it was a kid, you know, like my niece or something. But these thoughts are coming as quickly as what you could even think them. And so I think there's somebody under the bed, but I know there's no one there. And then I hear Donna. Now I look to my bedroom window because all the kids in our neighborhood, we all got together and played until the sun set, and things were different back then, what they are now. And we would talk to each other through the open windows at night if
right.
one could be out later than the other or whatever.
Are you sure? I remember.
And I look to the window, but the window is shut. And I am wearing flannel pajamas. So now I start thinking, no, it's cold outside and there's no one there. And before I can even get that thought out of my head, this voice says to me, Donna, don't be afraid. I just want to talk to you.
Uh-huh.
And with that, I became so afraid. I remember opening my mouth, but no sound came out. I tried to scream so hard, and no sound could come out. I was paralyzed with fear.
Well, sure. You know, the moment something tells you don't be afraid, your reaction is going to be, I've got something to be afraid of.
Finally, when the voice came out, my father came running to me, and he comforted me, but he really didn't even know what to say. I know that he and my mother had talked about it after that. And then, of course, there were other incidences in that house. And as I grew older, then my father would start to talk to me about how he had experienced things just like that in this house. But the thing that, and I've tried to analyze this, and listening to your programs, I'm wondering now if what I experienced there in that room that night was maybe a sort of time travel, because I refused to sleep in that room ever again.
Certainly one of the things, thank you very much, that you can't rule out about these incidents. And that is that it is some sort of time travel, some sort of portal, some sort of accidental entry into some other realm. That certainly is a possibility, but then again, so many of these things seem to be personalized, you know, as in a relative coming back to let you know that they're okay, or even the children. But occasionally, these stories, you know, they don't make sense in terms of any contemporary reason for a contact, and so it could be some sort of slip, some sort of entry into some other realm or dimension, accidental or whatever. And that might account for some of these things. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Art?
Hi.
Hi, this is Linda calling from Houston, Texas.
Hey, Linda.
And my story, it has to do with what you were just talking about. This was back in 1957, and I grew up in a small town not too far from Roswell, New Mexico.
Right.
It was in Texas, and we would always vacation in Cloudcroft, New Mexico, which is kind of up in the mountains, and it looks down on the White Sands missile range. And I can remember we used to go and watch them fire off the Sidewinder missiles.
Oh, what a neat place, yeah.
It was really neat. And so we were up on vacation. I was with my friend, and I was about 12 years old at the time, and we were walking out in the piney woods, and we saw this cabin, and it had a window that was a little bit open on the bottom, and we didn't see any cars around. So being kids, we opened the window and crawled down into the basement. And we didn't hear anybody, and I was attracted to a piano, so I went over and lifted the piano bench, and I was looking at the music, and
yeah.
It had music like the Andrews Sisters from World War II, and it had like Glenn Miller Orchestra, and I thought, well, this is funny, all this music is from the 40s. So I went over into a closet, and there was like a leather sports jacket from the 40s and a prom dress. So I said, well, let's go upstairs. So we went upstairs and went into the living room, and on the coffee table were these papers, newspapers, describing World War II. And I got to thinking, this is so strange. And I just looked around, and there was nothing from the 50s, no, you know, rock music or Elvis music or any other papers. And
my God, so it is what we were talking about. It's kind of like you slipped into another time, sort of accidentally or somehow, everything was from some other time.
And but it was not like dusty. At first I thought, well, maybe the family had just left the vacation home and been killed or hurt in an accident and never returned, but everything looked shiny and new, and I went to the kitchen, and there was like a small light on in the stove and like a coffee cup.
Yes.
And there was a medicine bottle, and I looked on it, and it was dated 1943.
Wow.
And the hair just stood up on my neck. And
yeah, I bet.
We've got to get out of here. I was just freaked out, so we crawled back out, and we were afraid to tell anybody because, you know, we went into the house. We didn't take anything, but later on, looking back at it, it was like stepping into a different time.
You know, I sometimes wonder, there are a lot of people in this world that just go missing. I mean, they're just never heard from again. No body's ever found. You know, they just go missing. There are many, many, many cases like that. And you've got to wonder if occasionally somebody like yourself has an experience like you had, except doesn't come back.
Well, in kind of analyzing this, looking back on it, my father was in the, he was an Army airman, and he helped work on the timing device that dropped the atomic bomb.
No kidding.
And he was killed in August of 1945, before I was born. I was born in December of 1945. And I always wished that I could have met my father or known him or been around him. And looking back on it, I think maybe that was sort of a way for him to show me how things might have been had I been there when he was there.
Well, that might be a leap on your part, or
it
not.
It took me a long time to kind of come to that conclusion, but I thought maybe I had gone back in time to try and see how things might have been back then.
Did you ever, well, you have no way of knowing. If you had embraced it and stayed, maybe you would have remained in that time, and you wouldn't be here talking to me right now.
That's what scared me the most. I had to get out of there because I could sense that really might happen.